Okay, everyone, welcome to this session on Tools of the Trade. I'm Dan Cleary from Science Magazine. And the idea behind this session came from a few years ago when a colleague of mine on Science Magazine was teaching a class in science journalism at Johns Hopkins University. And he sent an email round to all of the journalists on Science Magazine and said, how do you do interviews? You know, what techniques do you use? What tools do you use? And I thought, you know, dumb question, you need a pad and a pen. But I was surprised by all the variety of responses that came back. There was a lot of discussion about how you frame your questions, how you, you know, talk to people. There was also a lot of discussion of how to get down on paper. So, you know, some people knew shorthand. I've tried that. It's very hard to learn. other people did speed writing, which is a bit easier and looks a bit, little bit less like Martian. Some people just dropped vowels, like that one in the bottom left, which again is speeds you up a little bit. One of my colleagues used this thing called LiveScribe, which I'd never heard of before, which is a data logging pen. So you have to have a special sheet of paper which has wires in it, and as you write, it records the shape of your words, and they, you know, transmits them automatically to a computer, and also records audio at the same time. So very clever little device. The paper's very expensive, though, so not many people go for that one. there was also, you know, a lot of discussion of, you know, do you do interviews straight onto a laptop? Is that intrusive in an interview if you're typing away and looking at a screen when you're trying to talk to someone? Do you record interviews? Does that put people off? Or do you just rely on your notes? And photographing things. Some of my colleagues said they took a camera along and took pictures of things not to publish, but just to remind themselves of a scene. So when you are writing a story later and want to paint a picture of a lab or wherever you were in the field, having pictures of it really helps you get the color. And also people spoke about voice recognition and you know, how you can use that to transcribe interviews. Then there was a lot of discussion about these sort of programs for amalgamating lots of different types of information when you're working on a long story. So you can put your audio recordings, video recordings, text files, all sorts of things in one document so that you can just play around with them when you're composing your story. You know, Evernote and OneNote. OneNote is the Microsoft one, which I think comes with Microsoft Office. PairNote is a Mac. And they're very useful. I use OneNote. You know, my personal favorite, the highlighter pen, you know, perfect for highlighting those, you know, unmissable quotes in a long interview. Now, this was a long time ago, this discussion, before people used Twitter. In fact, I don't even know if any of us have heard of Twitter at the time. So, you know, there are many, many more tools and ways of using social media now that we didn't know then when we had this discussion. So our panelists are going to be talking about some of those tools too. But I hope once we get to questions, you know, that this will be a two-way street. You know, you'll tell us what you use. And, you know, if we've got time, we can look things up and just show screenshots of things that you use to do interviews. So, so I'll move on quickly to our panel. So we'll start off with Mukul Devishand, who is from BBC Trending. Now, if you hold on a second, I will find your presentation. I say confidently. Oh, I need that. Sorry for the delay. Talk amongst yourselves. Okay.
Okay, should I come up?
Yeah, come up here.
Move to the side, just a space bar.
Yeah, space bar, up and down arrow.
Okay, great.
Hello, everyone. So I'm from BBC Trending. I'll just very briefly tell you what that is, because I'm guessing most of you don't know. So it's a radio program on BBC World Service. It's also a blog and a regular television output. And this is what we do. We are sort of an answer to a question which a lot of big media organizations are asking themselves, which is, what shall we do in the social media era? So social media, I think, has been used two ways up until now. One, first of all, big media thought, well, great, we can just promote our own stuff, which we're getting good at. Secondly, they thought, well, hang on, we can actually use this to source stories, some of which I'll talk about. BBC Trending is something a little bit different, saying we can look at social media as some kind of indicator of the way that conversation is going around all sorts of topics, politics, culture, etc. So that's what we do at BBC Trending. We look at what's trending and why. But I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about some of the things that we've learned which are of general use to journalists. We're not specifically science journalists, but I think, you know, I'll tell you about some of these basic tools. All of the tools I'm going to talk about are either free for you to use or at very, very low cost for you to use. When we do subscribe to very expensive analytics packages to analyze social media. I'm not going to talk about them. These are cheaper analytics soft packages, which are all free and, frankly, almost as good. So, how do you know? I'm not going to talk too much about what you can do on Twitter or Facebook, etc., themselves, because I'm assuming that you either know it or you can find that out. These are other tools that investigate social media for you. Right, so the first thing is, what is trending? Now, you might want to know that for all sorts of reasons. The reasons I'll leave to you, but, you know, what tools can you use to find out what's trending quickly? So here are three. If you're interested in Twitter, which is both the most searchable, but also, it's a very searchable network, Twitter. It's designed that way. Everything is public. And there's a certain kind of Twitterati, which is on it, and you can see what they're talking about. And a lot of people use it for work purposes, so it's quite useful to see what maybe people in any professional group or circle are talking about. But it's full of self-publicists, and it's not the only network out there, I should say. But if you want to know what's trending, here's one very useful tool, trends24.com, which basically will tell you what is trending in a specific geographical location. You can choose either countries or cities all around the world, and it will go back. You can zoom out to the right, it will go back over 24 hours. So if you want to watch a social conversation and quickly look at that, that's a good tool. Videos, a lot of videos are of cats on skateboards or doing silly things, but a lot of things that happen on YouTube are also, we would argue, of social, political, cultural relevance. There is stuff that gets posted on YouTube which is worth you being across. They have their own internal analytics platform. It's not very powerful, but it's good for what it is. It's YouTube Trends Dashboard. And this is just the Trends Dashboard for Japan. You can break it down by age groups as well. If you're thinking about social media, remember that it's a very international thing. And you may be interested to know what people are talking about in China, for example. So in China, they don't use the same social networks as us. They use Sina Weibo on the whole. But you can access Weibo's top trend topics, that hotweibo.com. If you use Google Chrome and you put the translation, you download the translation app, you can translate that directly into English. So you can see in bad translation what they're talking about in China. So another thing you might be interested in is social media. When you register for your Twitter account or whatever, you're asked where you are. So there is a geographical reference point for every user. When you open it on your phone, you'll be given the option of using location services, which means that the phone will then transmit your location at all times every time you're using the platform. Actually, only about 5% of people keep location services on. But That's still quite useful because if you want to find somebody in a specific place at a specific time and know what they're talking about, you have that power with 5% of the people in the world that are on social media using their phone, which is hundreds of millions of people. So one tool that you can use for that is trendsmap.com, which is a very nifty little tool. And this is, as of about 3 p.m. yesterday, all the Twitter trends in London. So that is a kind of a word cloud, generated pick, looking at what people are talking about in different parts of the city. So Nigeria and Ghana are trending everywhere, but particularly in southeast London. Very interesting. So, you know, it'll tell you something. And you can zoom right in. So if you want to look at the spread of an opinion, a topic, if you want to watch it moving as people start to talk about it on social media, TrendsMap is a very quick and fun little tool. You can also use it, though, to track where a topic that you're interested in is being spoken about. So yesterday there was a story top of this Guardian Science page about the GM banana. You know, controversial subject. It spawned a hashtag, hashtag GM, which is often used on this topic. Where were they talking about hashtag GM yesterday? Well, the GM banana was meant to change the world in Africa. It was meant to be planted in Uganda, but they're not talking about it there. These are all the places in the world where they're talking about hashtag GM. But then you can go a lot more granular with the geography of social media as well. You might not be interested in just how the topic is spreading, but what individuals are saying. So this is a tool called Geofedia, which you can get a basic login to it, I think, for free. And then if you want to get the advanced features, you have to pay a small amount. So with that, you go to where you're interested in. So now we're interested in the GM banana and whether anybody's actually talking about it in Africa. And you can draw an area of the world, and then it will search every geolocated social media post in that area. It's not confined to Twitter. It will go for Facebook, Instagram, Flickr, many, many social networks. And anyone using them on a phone with a geolocation, it'll register. So that might be only 5% of all the users in all the world, but if you want to find somebody near the site of the proposed new GM banana plantation and get in touch with them, you can do it this way. You draw an area around the place. So I drew an area around Kampala. And these are all the people talking in Kampala right now. Not right now. In fact, at 3 p.m.-ish yesterday. But and you can see the social platform that they are posting on. If it's a Facebook post, it means it's a publicly available Facebook post. It's a powerful tool. I then searched for the GM banana many different ways, and nobody was talking about it in Kampala yesterday. But if I want to find somebody in Kampala and see what they think, I can just message them directly. And I can probably watch them walking around the street. You might want to turn location services off in your phone. All right, finally, you can use social media, as I'm sure you all do, to find people who know about the thing that you're researching. You have to use their self-proclaimed expertise in their bios online, but it's not bad. I'm sure anyone who uses Twitter lists. I'm not going to go into great detail about what they are. Does everybody here know what a Twitter list is? So I'm not going to talk about them too much, but they are an incredibly useful way of, you know, finding not only who you think is good at making a list, but looking for other people's lists and seeing what they think. And the second thing I'd just say is that there's this very powerful tool for searching bios, which is also free, called Follower Wonk. And so then you can search people's bios for what they say about themselves. But then, you know, you want to find out who they really are. You can do quite sophisticated analyses on those other tabs about who their followers are. So if somebody says that they are a very respected chemical engineer in a faculty in such and such a university, well, who's following them? And you might find by who's following them that they're actually not who they say they are. So that's a bunch of tools. And any questions? You know, I'll still be here.
I will, yeah. We'll do questions at the end.
Yep.
You going to go next?
I might need some tech help.
Yeah.
Just hoping this is going to work. Made noise. So you're going to have to bear with us.
It was settings, wasn't it, you did before?
Yes. Fantastic. Hi, everyone. I'm Laura Wheeler, and I'm the Community Manager for Digital Science. So for those of you that don't know, Digital Science is a business division of Macmillan Science and Education and also a sister company to Nature Publishing Group. So we invest in a collection of portfolio companies. You may be familiar with some of them, Figshare, Altmetric, ReadCube, Symplectic, just to name a few. And one of the challenges that we have is that all of our portfolio companies generate lots of content. So they may be featured in blogs and articles, they may be on the radio or in podcasts, and we want a way of being able to manage that content and also displaying it in a dynamic way. So I thought I'd talk a bit about the tools that we do use. I've just noticed also that's not the hashtag for today, so please don't use that. Community manager fail. So I just wanted to get a raise of hands firstly, because I've got three tools that I'm going to talk about, but I want to kind of gauge from the audience who uses them already, so I'll do shorter amounts. So does anyone here at the moment use something called Rebel Mouse? Brilliant. Fantastic. So Rebel Mouse is a really, really great curation tool. It allows you to pull in all of your social media, your blogging, your Instagram photos, articles, anything from the web in a really dynamic way. It also actually updates for you automatically, and you can sync it with tools like MailChimp, so you can send it out via newsletters. It also enables you to click on analytics and see how many people have clicked on it. So I guess the challenge that we have as digital science is we have lots of content that we want to display, but we want to pick and choose the content. So Rebel Mouse is a fantastic tool. I'm going to see if I can actually give you a quick demo of it. So this is the Wall Street Journal's Rebel Mouse account. And as you can see, it's got their latest social media content. It's got articles that they've pulled in. It's actually got infographics as well, so where it's being featured. So for journalists, this is also a really good recruitment tool. It was actually Rebel Mouse was founded by Paul Berry, the ex-CTO of Huffington Post. And he noticed that obviously social media comes hand in hand with journalism. So he wanted a way for journalists to put all their work in just one place. So it's really good if you want to just display perhaps testimonials or tweets about the work that you've been doing, or just linking out generally any content around what you've been doing. So I'll quickly show you the Digital Science account. So as you can see, as I said, we've got a collection of portfolio companies, so we want to be able to show the work that has been collected. So as you can see, this is a tweet of some of the Figshare swag that we have. And this is pictures, this is where we've been featured. And I've also put together a March report. It seems a bit out of date, but I do plan to do the rest of the month. So this is where we've been, thought leadership, where we've been featured. This is some announcements that we've been in. And this is other news. And this is some quotes. So it's a really great dynamic way of pulling in lots of content from across the web into one place. So that's Rebel Mouse. I've also got some links if you guys want to see how scientists actually use Rebel Mouse. So I can follow that up. I'll tweet them on the hashtag. So the next tool is Hootsuite. I'm sure a few of you use Hootsuite already, so just put a raise of hands if you're already using Hootsuite. Fantastic. So I won't spend too much time on Hootsuite. So we actually use the Hootsuite Enterprise version, which is a different solution to the free version of Enterprise. And just to put it in perspective, it actually costs around £1,000 per head. So it's very expensive, so I shan't delve too much into that. But some of the things that you can do with the Hootsuite Enterprise, which is slightly different from the freer version of Hootsuite, is not only can you manage all of your social media platforms, so Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all from one dashboard, you can actually assign security levels to different people. So, for example, if you've got an intern working with you or someone that you don't want to have full access to your account, you can allow them to tweet, but then you have to then give the sign-off of the publishing. It also allows you to auto-schedule posts, so it will determine when the best time online on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus is for you to post. So you can just, it's really simple, you just go into the platform and press auto-schedule and it will sync them all up, so you don't even need to think about when you need to post them. It also enables you to have vanity URLs. So if you have a blog or if you have a brand name or if you want to mark your identity on any shortened URLs, you can also use the vanity URL part of Hootsuite. So it's definitely, I'm happy, I know we don't have enough time for me to give you a full demo of Hootsuite, but if anyone wants to see how the enterprise solution looks like, I'm more than willing to give you a quick demo after this. And then next, does anyone use Storyful here at the moment? It seems to be quite an interesting tool for journalists. No? Oh, that's really good. So Storyful basically allows you to separate the news from the noise. So obviously the major challenge with social media is there is so much. So finding the really important things amongst all of the noise can be really challenging. So Storyful is a great little, it's a web browser as well as a Chrome extension. And I'm just going to, this is what the Chrome extension actually looks like. So easy to download, just search it in Google, Storyful Chrome extension. And what it allows you to do is a multi-search across, I think, 60 plus social media websites. And that includes Instagram, which is quite generally hard to search on the web if you don't have the app. So this allows you to pull up all of the related images. Let's see if we can actually quickly do it. Oh, UKSG. So as you can see, this is in the top corner. We can do the search. We'll see what comes up now. See if there's any photos of me. So as you can see, 60 plus. You can see some of these. So this is a really great way if you're writing a breaking news story or if you're looking for things that people have said about you, you can actually search yourself. You can see what's the latest news, so you can see. Sometimes I have to be signed into some of these. Ah, so Sarah Hartley has posted a lovely picture of the Royal Society. So as you can see, it drags in all of that social media content. So if you need to find what's hot and what's not and break it down and separate it from the noise, that's Storyful. So finally, I'm going to quickly show you Topsy. Who's heard of Topsy? So there's only a handful of people. I can't believe there's not more people who haven't heard of Topsy before. Topsy is like the Google for social media. It allows you to search absolutely everything. And in fact, I had a meeting with Twitter, and Twitter actually used Topsy themselves. So if that's not interesting enough. So here you're able to search. So it's really great as well if you have, if you're a blogger, you can actually search links to your blogs in Topsy. So this just covers Twitter and Google Plus. And so as you can see, so far we've got 308 tweets, but over the past 30 days there's been nearly 1,000 tweets on the hashtags. So that's a lot of tweets. The really great thing about Topsy is that it's free, and also you can see who are the influencers. So you can click here, and I know a couple of people in the audience are influencers here. So this is a really good way, if you're at a conference, to identify the people you need to talk to. So anyone here you need to talk to. But it's also really good to kind of gauge the sentiment. So it gives you Topsy sentiment scores. So obviously the higher the sentiment score, the more positive the thing is. So this is great. You can search absolutely anything. So keywords, again, good for breaking news stories, good for finding the right people that you want to engage with who are, particularly important in a specific field. So Topsy is the best tool. I use it regularly. It also has an analytics section where you can compare, as you can see, you've got football, soccer, and basketball at the moment. And this allows you to compare trends. I actually most recently met with a guy that looks after the Coca-Cola Twitter account, and he often compares himself on Topsy to Pepsi. So it's a good way to compare yourself with your competitors. So that's Topsy. Thanks. Does anyone have any questions, or immediate questions, or should we just move on?
Yeah, we'll wait and do questions in the end. So, you just need the internet, is that right?
Yeah, I'll just, yeah.
Get it to show on there.
It's working slowly.
It is, but it's not showing on the screen. That's the problem.
Ah.
That's plugged in.
Got mine to work, and then
actually could we use yours? Yeah.
Do you want to just use mine?
Yeah, I'm only going to need the browser.
Yes.
While we're doing
perfect.
That, does anyone have any questions? If you're if you have a question,
thanks.
Wait for the microphone to come to you so it can be recorded.
What's that?
Anybody?
Okay, I mean, actually, the first tool, which I hadn't thought of mentioning, but this is it. I'm actually using it to collect the links together. Who uses Delicious or Pinboard or a social bookmarking service? It always surprises me how few people use these. These are ways of storing links to pages, documents, data, reports, previous articles, and tagging them as you go. So it's like a personal archive, a personal clippings file. The difference between this and having favorites on your browser is obviously you can access this from any other computer, and if you want to share it with people, you can. So if you want to see all of the tools that I'm going to talk about today, including the ones I won't have time to talk about, if you just go to pinboard.in, I'll tweet this later, /U:PaulBradshaw/T:UK CSJ, that the U is for user, the T is for tag. Delicious is a bit simpler in that respect. At Delicious, you would just go to delicious.com/PaulB/UK CSJ. But it's a good way of combining links. If I'm ever doing a story on health data, or I want to find data on housing, then I just need to look at anything that I've kind of tagged housing plus data, or health plus GP. And I'll find things that I've found in the past that I may well have forgotten about completely or never even looked at. So that's Pinboard. But I'll start simply with a tool which, again, I don't think a lot of people are aware of. If you're ever searching for data or information, data, by the way, is an area I'm obviously particularly interested in. You might use Google, you might even use advanced search operators like specifying that you only want spreadsheets or you only want PDFs. But Google actually has a table search engine which will look for tables on web pages. And the address of that is research.google.com/tables. So this will find tables on web pages rather than just web pages that talk about statistics or that might mention data. This actually finds the tables. A similar site, I think it's called Xanran, xanran.com, also allows you to search for tables on web pages, but it will also specify Excel spreadsheets, PDFs, and so on, even images containing tables. If you do come across an image with a table in it or a PDF with a table in it, there's a very useful tool, free tool, called Tabula, which was designed for journalists who are dealing with scanned PDFs, where they want to extract a table of data from a PDF, but they don't necessarily have the software to do it. So you essentially draw over the area you want to convert, and it will try to convert that to a spreadsheet table that you can actually perform calculations with, draw charts with, and so on and so forth. Anyone use Tabula? Right, it's Connie at the back there, head of a curve. Moving on to getting hold of data. If you've got data in tables on web pages, there are an increasing number of tools that allow you to grab that data through a process called scraping. Who knows what scraping means? So not everyone, okay. So scraping is basically asking a computer to gather data in some way. There are all sorts of ways you can do that. You can grab a number of spreadsheets and combine it into one, number of PDFs. You can grab tables from web pages or just information from different web pages. The most recent tool is called Kimono. And I really like this. It's very, very fast and very, very intuitive. All you have to do is drag a bookmarklet onto your browser toolbar. So you just click and drag from the page onto the toolbar. And then when you're on a page that you want to grab information from, you click that button and tell it what information you want. So if, for example, I was looking at decisions about malpractice in medicine, for example. So there's a particular board which makes decisions about striking people off a register, things like that. Now, that web page is updated at various times. You don't necessarily know when. But you can use a tool like Kimono to say, grab information, all the information from that page, put it in a structured form, and also repeat that and keep doing it even when I'm not looking, and send me that as an RSS feed or something like that. It's worth playing with to kind of get the gist of what it can do. But if you are doing anything repetitive in your work, if you're having to check the same page time and time again, in fact, I'll show you a very good example of this. So a page like this, which is publishing statistics on patients being left on beds, trolleys or chairs, okay? So every day this updates. This is in Ireland. And you'll probably have similar sorts of pages in your own field. If you're having to check something every day, it's much better to set a computer to do that for you and gather that information and store it. So something like Kimono would not only grab that today, but it would grab it tomorrow and it would keep today's results and it would repeat that. So you could compare different days. Similar tools, if that doesn't float your boat, then there's one called import.io, which does something very similar. And they're live as well, so if you want to do any kind of live visualization, your developers, if you have developers, can work with this to pull the data and put it into live tables, charts, and so on. Who uses OpenRefine? Google Refine? Well, this is really, really useful if you're dealing with any sort of data. You'll probably be familiar with getting spreadsheets where there are loads of extra heading rows that you don't really want, where there's dirty data, it's not always consistent, where you've got a number of different tables or spreadsheets and you need to combine them all into one, or data is being published in XML format or JSON, which is increasingly the case. All of those problems can be dealt with very, very easily in OpenRefine. So if you want to combine a number of spreadsheets, you just open them all up in OpenRefine and then save it as an Excel spreadsheet. If you come across an XML feed of data, you put the URL into OpenRefine and then import it and save it as an Excel spreadsheet. It has tools for cleaning up things like inconsistent capitalization, looking at very similar terms that are probably the same thing, loads and loads of things on OpenRefine. I'll tweet a link as well to some tips on that. Now, I don't think that gives me much time left, so I'll do some of the prettier stuff. I think filming with iPads and iPhones is particularly attractive now, particularly with iMovie. I think iMovie on an iPad, iPad mini perhaps, or an iPhone, is incredibly intuitive now. You can split the audio from the video, so you can do cutaways, you can do all that sort of stuff. And film and edit and publish an interview within the space of about half an hour if it's a nice short kind of 2 or 3 minute piece. Some of the tools for this, you need good quality audio. So iRig Pre will plug into your phone or iPad the audio socket, and it will allow you to plug in a kind of a proper microphone. And then there's Padcaster, which gives you a frame for your iPad, so you can put lenses on it, you can attach lighting, like an LED light, you can attach the microphone to that frame, and you can attach the frame to a tripod, so you've got a steady shot. An incredibly fast turnaround of video interviews. And then, finally, if you're looking at long-form journalism, Creativist is a fascinating platform. If you've ever wanted to do one of those snowfall, if you've seen New York Times and the Snowfall Interactive, Creativist, there are a number of tools that allow you to try and replicate that effect, but Creativist is one of the most powerful. So you get these kind of
scrolls. I'll just show you one example. Why can't I click on that? Anyway. So, this is where Pinboard comes in useful. So actually, this is a project that one of my students did on Creativist, looking at she actually flew to Guinea and was looking at the history of the slave trade there and family trees and so on. So it's all in French. But you can see how the kind of scrolling, it allows you to use nice big images. It's a nice, clean design. If you have individuals involved, you can have little profiles popping up. Any places, likewise. So that's about that particular guy. You can have audio embedded in it, video embedded in it. So there's a nice bit of audio, video. Maps, infographics, and so on. There's some audio in here as well. So for that kind of really big impact story that you think deserves this sort of treatment, it's well worth exploring. Very, very powerful. And lovely and pretty. So on that, I think I've probably hit my 7 or 10 minutes, yes, and I'll stop. Exactly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, questions. So if you've got a question, put your hand up, wait for the microphone, say who you are, and you can ask to have live demonstrations if you'd like to. Yes.
Thank you, Laura. You mentioned Hootsuite, but not TweetDeck. Do they do similar things?
Yeah, they are very similar, actually, and we've tinkered with both of them. But the advantage that Hootsuite has that TweetDeck doesn't is that Hootsuite enables you to build analytic dashboards, and the enterprise solution actually syncs with your Google Analytics. I can actually show you if you'd like. I'm going to have to hook it up again. But I do like TweetDeck, I have to admit. It's great for scheduling, but Hootsuite does absolutely everything that TweetDeck does.
And TweetDeck's just Twitter, isn't it? Is that right?
Well, the disadvantage with TweetDeck is that it's continuously changing. So I think the thing that frustrated me is that they were changing the platform every now and again. So you'd become really comfortable with how things worked, and then suddenly they'd change it. So, and it has just been bought by Twitter.
I think as well, it's the ability to have multiple users with different permissions in Hootsuite that's really appealing. Twitter does now allow you to have Facebook and other social networks, but it's that permissions.
And I think the advantage as well with Hootsuite, I can't connect it again. Oh. Sorry.
Pull it out and pull it back in again, hopefully.
Put it out. With Hootsuite as well, you can connect all different apps. So if you're on other social sites like AppNet, I'll show you how it works, actually. So this is the enterprise dashboard. It's actually very similar to the free dashboard. The only things that we get that the free one doesn't offer you is the level of security. So we use this across Macmillan Science and Education, and we've got 20 seats. So as I said before, it's about £1,000 a seat, so that works out at about £20,000 a year, so it's really expensive. But it's very useful for us because not only does it allow us to tell us whether our activities are successful, it allows us to then share management report dashboards with senior management. So if I can show you, there's got on the side an analytics section. Sorry. And these are all the template reports that I build. So I actually set them up so that they can be emailed automatically to the relevant people, which is also really useful. So it kind of takes out the stress and strain of me having to count how many followers we have, how many followers do we have last week, how many followers did we have the year before. And I joke and I say that, but I actually used to do that. So about 4 years ago, I used to, in a Google Doc, write down how many followers. And I used to do it for all of Nature's Twitter accounts, which was 100 plus. So This now takes out the effort and the manual strain of going through and counting things. So it really streamlines your social media efforts. So if I can take a look at this report. Here you can see you can actually edit these and you can customise them and make them look pretty. So you can put logos on and you can see Facebook activity looks like it's gone down, which is never a good thing. And you can do the same for Twitter and on Google Plus as well. I think Google Plus is one of the tricky social sites because it doesn't really integrate with many apps, and that's kind of on purpose. Google wants to have control of it. So the great thing about Hootsuite is that it integrates with Google Plus, so you can also schedule your Google Plus posts. There's only, to my knowledge, please correct me if I'm wrong, there's only one other application, and it's called DoShare, which is a Chrome extension, which allows you to schedule to Google Plus. So the only other platform that enables you to do that is Hootsuite, unless anyone can correct me. I'm happy to be proven wrong. So that's why Hootsuite, it does it all. It covers all. And we tested lots of different things. So we tested TweetDeck, a company called Social Flow, a company called Social Bro. So we've kind of tried them all and tried and tested. And it took us about 2 years to come to this decision. So, does anyone have any questions or want me to show you how we've set it up? So yeah, I'll just quickly show you how we've got our search streams. So I think I touched upon the challenges that we have at Digital Science is that we invest in a collection of portfolio companies. So the way that we've set up our dashboard here, and you can do this in the free version, so if you're not already using something like Hootsuite, it's really great for content discovery. So as you can see here in this tab, so you set up tabs, and in this tab I've set up a list here which covers all of our portfolio companies, so I can keep track on every single thing that they tweet. So I'm kind of like the social media police. I go in, and if they've tweeted something wrong, I'll go in and tell them off. And then here we've got search streams of our portfolio companies. So from here, from this dashboard, I can decide whether to interact with them. I can actually go in and assign things to people. So, for example, I might see that there's this tweet here. I don't know. Altmetric funk spam. So I might decide, actually, I really want the Altmetric team to deal with this. I can then assign it to them and click a note, say, what's this about, and assign it to them, and they'll get a notification, and then they can deal with it accordingly. So if you're collaborating on work with other people and you find interesting content on social media, you can then share it with those relevant people. So it's really great, not only for discovering what's going on, but also for finding out. I also have my personal Twitter account here, and it's great because I can manage not only my professional Twitter accounts, but also my personal ones. And I set up search streams for events. So I'm attending SciFu this year, and so I've set up a search stream for the hashtag on that conference. So we could set up one for today's conference, for example, and then it's a great way to filter through the content and see what's live and what's good and what you want to interact with and stuff. So that's why. Very long answer to why Hootsuite over Tweet.
Yeah, question about that. Hold on just a second.
Hi, yeah, the third speaker. I think you mentioned scraping, but in the past I tried doing that with Google and it shuts you down very quickly because it doesn't really like you doing that. I was wondering if you have any ideas of how to get around that or if it's just a perpetual problem.
You mean scraping Google search results? Funnily enough, Google Spreadsheets is quite good at scraping Google. There's a function in Google Spreadsheets called import HTML, which will grab a table, and there's another one called import XML, which is slightly more advanced. But with that general problem of being kind of blocked, it's normally to do with how demanding your scraper is, so how many calls it's making to that website, how many times it's loading. So the main solution is normally to slow that down, what's normally called throttle. So if there's some sort of throttle settings, then try and use those, or just scrape a couple of pages and stop it, and then come back and scrape another couple kind of manually if you have to. So, yeah, that's normally the problem. Things like, it'd be worth trying different tools as well. Kimono seems to perform quite well, like I said, on that. Importio certainly I've used to scrape search or Google search results without any problems.
Yes. Hi, Richard Van Norden from Nature. On things like Rebel Mouse, how much is that using it to sort of put yourself out there as a brand and promote yourself? I mean, do you have any idea how much people sort of come to Rebel Mouse and see that as a sort of front page to keep up with the content? Like the Wall Street Journal has a Rebel Mouse account, but what's it actually
I think I don't have any sort of analytics or stats on how the usage of Rebel Mouse. I know that a lot of big news outlets use Rebel Mouse. I think someone once described it as a mashup between Tumblr, Storify, and Pinterest. So from that respect, it kind of has all of those elements, and they kind of coin themselves as the front page of the social media web so that it collates everything in one place. But I think the advantage and why it's so attractive to brands and journalists and publishers is that you can sync it with tools like MailChimp, which is the popular marketing tool for sending out newsletters. So a lot of people tend to use that version so they can send out bespoke. It takes off, actually. The premium version is called Rebel Raw, and it's quite expensive. But with the premium version, you can actually strip it of all Rebel Mouse / Rebel Raw branding. So you can really build quite pretty newsletters, which are dynamic. So they update automatically. So you don't even need to think about when you send out your newsletter, who you send it out to. It gets sent to your contacts in MailChimp or to your social media contacts or to the people that are actually already on Rebel Mouse. But it seems to be very popular for journalists as a way of displaying their content. So I was reading a couple of articles, which I'll share with you all afterwards. I think we should perhaps put all of our links into a Google Doc and share it with everyone so you all know what we're doing afterwards. But saying that journalists are using Rebel Mouse in job interviews because it's a fantastic way of displaying like testimonials and what people have said online, because you know, now it's the altmetric movement, right? People are talking about what you're doing on social media, and it is a gauge of how popular you are or if you're a good writer. So it's kind of comes hand in hand that social. You want a way of displaying your social media coverage as well as your actual article coverage. But now we have sort of the not wannabe journalists, but general people that are becoming journalists on social media. And so we want to take into that public opinion, but we also want a way of being able to curate it and edit it. So you don't want to bring in the spammy stuff, and you don't want, you know, oh, this is a rubbish story. So it's a really good way of being able to also have your own editorial overview of the content that you display. So the way Rebel Mouse works is things can either be dynamic or they can be static. So if you have a really good piece of work that you always want to be on your front page, you can always keep it there. So it's a nice, you can completely have control over what other people see, as well as it being updated and as well as it being linked with what you're constantly tweeting or posting onto social media. So, as I said, we're just testing it out at the moment. For us, it's a really good way of collating press coverage in one place. And as I said, especially seeing as we've got lots of different companies that we're working with that are all over the news and all over the web, social media as well, so it's an important part to everything.
Hi there. I was wondering if you were familiar with or what your thoughts were on scientific social networks. I'm biased here. I represent Mendeley. But Mendeley, Zotero, all of those that actually, you know, have the community of academics as a way of getting sources for stories. And in the case of Mendeley, also organizing sort of your workflow and papers and sources all in one place. So I'm here to sort of talk about that later, and I'd be interested if anyone here actually uses it and you know, how you use it if you do. Yeah.
Digital science, obviously, one of our portfolio companies is ReadCube, which is quite similar to what Mendeley are achieving in the sense that they're. You should all definitely check out ReadCube as well, because they're almost quoted as the iTunes for science papers. So if you're looking for a way to collate your science papers and a way to also discover content that's related to the stuff that you're interested in, you should definitely take a look at ReadCube. But I think I've been burnt by social networks for scientists, because I actually worked on Nature Network back in the day. So I don't know, is there anyone here that's been on Nature Network? I know there's a few people in the audience that used to be on Nature Network. But that was a social site for scientists specifically, where groups of scientists could talk about their areas of interest. They could share their publications. They could physically arrange meetups. So we had lots of hubs in London, Boston, and Paris. And it was a really great place. And at the time when it first launched, around 2007, it really was a flourishing hub where scientists wanted to come to. But unfortunately, the tech didn't support the movement as we got on. And then obviously, scientists then start to use Facebook. So I think our reasoning behind it was we're better to follow where scientists are going, so going to other social sites like Facebook and Twitter and having a presence there, than actually trying to build a social site that does what Facebook's already doing and has really bad tech. So that's my background to that. I don't know if you guys have a thought.
No, I mean, I've heard of them, but I've never used them. Anyone else here used scientific social networks?
Yeah, yes? I used ResearchGate. That's more common, and many scientists over there, and back in my PhD days also, uploaded my publications and so on, and I can answer questions.
I think the microphone's not working. Is that working now? I don't know.
Hello?
Yes.
So, yeah, to repeat everything, just shortly, I used ResearchGate, and that's more useful, I guess, to follow scientists and, to answer questions or to ask questions and get publications and so on. And there's another thing called Utopia. So there's also possibility, it has Utopia has embedded ReadCube in its package, so that's another thing I think some of people know.
It's good because you can ReadCube is great because if you're looking for science papers, you can download them immediately, and that you can also annotate them. So it's a really great way if you want to make notes, or if you want to put out figures, or if you want the references. But also at the same time, you want to discover relevant content. It's a really great tool for that. In fact, I was ReadCube have got some stats on how much time it saves scientists, which I can share in the Google Doc afterwards. And I remember when I was doing my thesis, it goes back to down to Dan's presentation that he did at the beginning, the highlighter pen. I would print out my science papers and highlight everything. Mm. And if I'd known that something like ReadCube existed at the time, so. Yeah, it saves a lot of time, but I think with research, I think ResearchGate as well.
Site you like?
Yeah, they can be quite spammy though. ResearchGate often sends emails, and I think they use some interesting tactics to get people to use their platform. If you co-authored a paper, they will then email everyone saying, so just be cautious of the spam.
Yeah.
Is it working? Okay. I'm a freelancer, so I'm just interested in all those sites that you just mentioned. Do you have to have an institutional email address to set them up? And can I even access half the papers if I'm a freelancer and not?
It depends if you've got subscriptions to things.
Yes,
I can send you the details of it afterwards if you like.
And would that be the same for all the
others? I don't know about I'm not sure about ResearchGate. I'm not sure. Or there's another platform called academia.edu as well. Suspect you might have to have institutional emails for that.
Yeah, because I think I've tried to look at some of them before and I get stuck when I even try to get anywhere.
It can be quite frustrating as well. I think the difficulty is a lot of these things are just web-based, whereas ReadCube you can access on your iPhone, on your iPad, so you can access it anywhere on the go, which is really useful. I don't think there's any competitors out there that do that at the moment.
Yes, Memento doesn't actually. But.
Any more questions? Well, I think actually it is lunchtime. So thank you, everyone, for coming, and thank you to the speakers.